Welcome to segment two of episode six of the Eldest Woman's Book Review, where we talk about Against All Odds by Shirley Ballman. We're still doing our contest, so if you want to know the details of that, visit our website at www.ldswomansbookreview.com and find out how you can enter to win an autographed copy of The Believer by Stephanie Black. We already talked about the books we read recently, so we've covered that. I want to just jump right into Against All Odds, which is a story, it says, amazing pioneer stories of courage and survival. So, Hillary, what was your favorite story?
I like The Iron Lady.
Oh, yes.
Because I thought that's what I would do, I think. Maybe. I don't know if I'd have the courage to do that, actually.
If an Indian was trying to
lift up my skirt.
Lift up your skirt to peek, you turn around and whack him with a skillet.
I thought that was hilarious. But plus she kind of reminded me a little bit of myself, where you want to do something nice for someone else, but you don't want it to go too far, like, because you're thinking of your needs of your own family, too, mm-hmm. at the same time, like, mm-hmm. with the ham bone, and you glare at your child, like, shut up, you know, and because I've done that
we
with my daughter, I'm like,
bone.
Quit talking, you know, kind of thing, and so I thought that was a little bit like me sometimes, and, I mean, she wasn't a bad woman or anything by any stretch, she was still very generous and kind, but... You know, she recognized the needs of her family, too, and then to whack the onion across the head with the skillet, I thought that was great.
And those two women come back and said that, you're the Iron
Lady. You're in the
what
Iron Lady now.
And she knocked him out.
She
didn't just hit him over the head, she knocked him out.
And his two friends just dragged him legs plunking down the stairs.
I know, they didn't say anything, they just didn't do anything, and I thought that was great. I thought that was a crack-up.
Okay, I think maybe we should just go through these stories.
Okay.
Strange Bedfellows. I was thinking,
the snakes,
what is the title?
That was awful.
Ooh, to start, have that be the first book.
I did not like that story. It was ew.
It was ew to me, too.
Where there was all that writhing on her mom's bed thing and everything. And that was scary, too.
Okay. I was just like, oh, my gosh.
Stayed in the dugout. They stayed in their dugouts. And
what else was their choice?
Run out into the outside and scream.
That's what I would have done.
Grab
that
my kids and run out.
Was, you know?
Well... But I was thinking, they're coming out of the woodwork, all of these, only there
but
was no
woodwork.
But they
were all outside,
it
too,
reminded
though.
Me of that part in Indiana Jones, right?
It's all those,
all the
snakes
and it's overwhelming that you just can't control it. And that's what I thought of. I'm like, they can't control all these
rattlesnakes, no less. But it was still cold enough that they did not move very fast, which is the only reason why they were still alive.
That's
why
true.
The people were still alive.
Yeah.
They were coming out of hibernation, coming out of the cracks in the rock. And
can you imagine waking up and knowing there's a rattlesnake in your bed with you?
Ew.
That just scared me.
Not just one, but a lot.
Yeah.
What did they say? Ultimately, they killed 500 rattlesnakes.
500 snakes.
300 of them that day, all of the pioneers. And yet, this was the most interesting thing. They gave them to the Indians, because the Indians came and saw all the dead snakes, and they're like, you have many good snakes. And they're like, here,
take them.
They're all yours. But that helped the relationship with the Indians.
Yeah, it did, so that was really interesting.
Wasn't the story that I found really heart-wrenching, I mean, a lot of them are, but was Hostage Baby.
Oh, can you imagine being put in that situation?
But what did the mom do instead of yelling at her husband when her baby... Well, to give a summary of it, one of the chief's sons was killed by white men, and he wanted no revenge, but the brother of the chief demanded payment of goods, and they took the 2-year-old son of the man who was in charge of the settlement.
Morley, I think was his name.
Right, Isaac.
And as assurance that they would get those
exactly,
goods.
Exactly, in goods in return of the son. Even though the people at the settlement, the pioneers that were at that settlement, had nothing to do with the death of the Indian son. I mean, they had nothing to do with it. It was some other settlers that had killed the two young Indian Native American boys. Right. It says, Will Potter offered to go in the baby's place, but what did the mom do? She prayed all night long for the safety of her baby.
She wailed. She was sad. She wasn't happy about it.
But she turned to where we all should turn in times of trial.
Can you imagine, if your husband just said, by the way, you know, didn't even... say, hey, how do you feel about this? And this is why I'm going to do it. He just takes him and gives him to the chief. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I would freak if my husband did that.
But the kind of man her husband was.
But that's true. That's true. He wouldn't do something.
He probably would have been. But you know, the fact that the Indians came back, I love the message at the end of that. Are you there?
Yes.
Where it said, he says, you trusted me with your son. I can trust you to provide the goods. And they brought him back the next day.
But I love how they brought him back. Oh, it was so cute.
Dyed brown with walnut.
Buckskins. Yeah. And I thought, Bob, that kid had a good old time.
He had a wonderful time.
They probably had a great time looking at his blonde curls.
Oh, they probably, you know, they would love that blonde hair.
But she, I love how she ran out, grabbed the baby from the Indians, went inside the house and locked the door.
I know. I would have done the same thing. It would have been no words spoken.
No, I don't know if some of these things are just kind of, just if Shirley embellished them a little bit for the story, because she says at the end what's true. She says at the end what's true, but they're all first person, so I wonder if she kind of puts her own little.
She might have helped them out
based on true, based on true events, but kind of added her embellishments.
Do you know what surprised me about this book too? Was that I expected it to be stories of them crossing the plains.
Exactly.
It was not stories about being in the settlements. And I was really surprised when I'm reading this and I'm reading along going, wait, none of these are stories about crossing the plains.
That's true. But it proves that the hardships didn't end once they got to the other side.
I know, and that's the naive opinion that we have us now. They got here and it was piece of cake. Uh-huh. You didn't realize how much they dealt with the Indians and how much troubled and how... You know, it's a really unstable relationship with the Indians. They could be happy with you one day and the next day...
You'd never know.
And you're just like, what did I do?
I could not live with that uncertainty.
No, that's pretty scary. And especially these outlying settlements had it even worse, where...
Exactly.
I mean, what was it that
you'd
one
just be
where...
working in your field and they'd come and kill you.
What was that story about Tavanaugh, the Indian guy that the brother of Wakara? Uh-huh. I like that story, too, because the grandfather was so...
Anti-Indian
and what have you. I think he might have been.
But he was injured, and the people who were stuck in the snow there took him in, and they nursed his wounds, and then when the Indians, a few days later, or weeks later, whatever, when
charged.
The Indians came, he went out there and said, stop, you know. And then the Indians helped them by going and let the people at the settlement know they were stranded.
Yeah, I know. I thought that was really interesting. So I thought that was a good story.
Now, the one that really struck me was... Bloody Finger story.
I know. I could see it in my head going, oh, that's just
What would you do? Some Indian's poking his finger in your latch hole where they would run the leather through so they could open the door from the inside, or from the outside, but pull the string through and it would be locked and you couldn't get in from the outside. And he's sticking his finger in there trying to find the string. And she takes a knife and... But then guess what they did? They came in and wanted to meet her.
They honored her because of her bravery.
But she was brave. She's good medicine, and so they came and wanted to touch her.
I couldn't believe that. I was expecting a war party to come after her or something.
And they just come and knock on the door. Where's your woman who cut off finger?
Keep brave.
Keep brave.
You know, though, you think about it, though.
See, brave
women,
good medicine.
Well, they were just brave because their children were there. They were protecting their children. You know, I always say that I am a grizzly, I'm a mother grizzly bear when it comes to my kids.
Oh, yeah.
I will do anything to protect my kids. I mean, within reason. But, you know, if I was in this situation, I would probably have done the same thing.
Oh, yeah. Me too.
You know,
yeah,
I would have done the same thing.
I probably would have not thought much of it.
Exactly.
Just because we're talking about the safety of your kids here.
Exactly.
We have it easy where our lives are pretty easy. What threats we have, we can call the police, the military's there, you know, for threats on our country. There's really not a lot other than maybe a personal attack from, a robber or, you know, it's a home invasion or something like that. Those are so rare, and usually on fellow gang members and things. So you don't really have to worry about that necessarily.
It's the silent things.
But these guys live with it every day. They had to work every day, or they did not eat.
That's true.
They didn't have their lazy days. They had to plan. They spent their entire summer getting ready for winter.
Mm-hmm.
They spent their entire winter trying to stay alive
as
so
like
they could
survival,
be there for the next
right.
And, you know, right. And especially settling new areas with Indians. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine never knowing and also being surrounded with so much death because there was a lot of death.
Mm-hmm. Well, they were their own grocery stores.
Exactly. They had to whatever extra they had, they needed to trade for the other things they didn't have.
Right.
And that was just surviving. We really take for granted just the life we have.
We have... Nowadays, we worry about the drugs, the pornography, the gangs.
Well, that's a different kind of
exactly, and that's what we have to deal with now in protecting our kids. And talk about scary. You know,
frankly, I think I'd rather be working for my life than having my spirituality threatened by things that are being threatened today.
I agree.
You know what they've said? Well, I remember in seminary, one of our teachers said, and I believe it's been expressed through different talks and things, the general authorities is that the people who lived then are going to want to meet us when we get to heaven. They're going to respect us for living. If we make it and we fight and we make it, we endure to the end and believe in everything that Christ has done for us and have total faith in his ability to save us, and we repent and do our best to live up to the gospel, and we make it to the other side, people are going to want to shake our hands because we made it through hardship that even the pioneers are going to think is hard.
Which is amazing. I read some of the stories of my pioneer ancestors. I had a great-great-grandmother that came across. She rode. She was so ill that she had to ride in the wagon on top of a stove all the way across the plains. And she had the scars on her hips the rest of her life from, you know, the wagon bouncing up and down and up
from
and down.
The blisters,
yes. Somewhere. Yeah, the scars the rest of her life she had. But she wanted to come so badly to, you know, where this Zion, where the saints were, that she rode on this stove, endured the pain all those months riding on top of that stove. And I read that and think, oh my word. I mean,
and I won't even go camping without a cot. So there you go.
I know, isn't it just amazing how picky we are?
We admire that, but what does that say about how we have it and don't even realize it?
Oh, I know.
When they who suffered so much, that something we have a hard time understanding, are going to admire us for the hardship that we've
been
through.
Well, they went through more of a physical challenge, and we're going through more of a spiritual challenge, where I think it'll be... I've heard similar quotes like that in seminary.
It's easier to survive a physical challenge.
Yeah, it's like, oh,
like,
you know, I look at the... I do look at the pioneers, and I have family that crossed the plains as well. Well, I think most of us do. And I think in terms of, could I have done that? And then I think, well, they say that, you know, we've got it harder. And I go, oh, well, wait a minute. What am I facing as a mother to teach my children?
Or even as a person.
Or even yourself. As a person. And who says it's not going to get even worse?
Oh,
which
we know it will.
We know it will. We know it will. So, I mean, it's a question of, it's not a question of, you know, which was harder. Well, I don't know if it's which was harder, but it's not going
to
end
easy. It's just not giving up. It's enduring to the end, no matter what you're facing. Physical,
yeah,
spiritual, so. Emotional.
Right.
The one story that I found interesting that she included in here that I kind of was wondering how it fit in was the horse race story.
Yes,
that was
interesting.
I did too. I thought,
where
Chief
Wakara went down to Mexico.
I thought he was clever, tell you that.
quietly in the night, stole a bunch of horses from the Mexicans.
Right.
Got back to the river that they had forded where it was fine, but there had been a storm, and so the river was now unfordable. And so they took some of the sickliest horses out of the herd, and he went back and said to the Mexicans who were pursuing them, and said, here, we brought your horses back. We ride for many days to bring your horses back. Chief Wakara, he crazy. Possessed by evil spirits. We want nothing to do with him. We don't want to be with him anymore. He's days away. We brought you your horses back. And they ended up paying Chief Wakara.
I thought that was hilarious.
In gold.
I thought, what a clever man.
Well, and also, these were the horses that were the worst of the batch. They sent all the good ones on ahead.
Well, they took the golden reward for the efforts of bringing back these sickly horses.
The horses that they stole.
I think I have an answer for you, why she put this story in. There are several other stories where he is in... He's in the story, so they wanted us to
see his character.
Yeah, see what type of man that they were dealing
how
with.
How unstable he was, like when he wanted to marry.
Oh my gosh, that 17-year-old girl.
He was older than
I was like, he had to be in his 50s or something.
Or even older.
Or maybe even older than that. I was like, because then he dies 3 months later. I'm like, how old was this guy?
How ironic.
So,
this
I
is...
felt so sorry for that boy, though.
Oh, I know. You're
why
like,
didn't
oh.
she say my name?
I know, I thought that was cute.
The summary of this one. And this person with a motorcycle always drives by when we're recording our podcast.
He must know.
So
that
to our listeners,
here.
We're very sorry that you can hear the motorcycle in the background, but almost every time we record this podcast,
it
he
really
drives
adds
by.
To the pioneer theme, doesn't
yes,
it? That we're talking about right now.
Vroom. Nice Harley. Anyway, this is what the summary is. Chief Wakara got permission from Mormon Church President Brigham Young to marry a white woman, provided he found one who would agree to marry him. He proposed to young Mary Artemisia Lowry.
I don't know if you can call it a proposal, really.
No.
I was like, if my husband had asked me that way, I probably would have laughed at him. I don't know.
Fearing for the safety of the town if she refused, she told him she was already married. When he
to her brother-in-law, no less. I'm like, oh, I bet her sister loved that one.
But when she told her father the story, he sent Mary and George to Salt Lake as quickly as possible to get married. This judge, George Peacock, had two wives. They were both sisters. All because she said that to an Indian chief. I guess she better live up to her word.
Well, the boy that loved her said, oh, I never minded the thought of plural marriage until this moment. It was perfectly legal for Judge Peacock to be married to Sarah and then marry Mary, too, as long as both women agreed. It was like, aww. poor kid.
Oh, you know what, little
I know you felt bad for him. I just like, oh, I know. I thought it was so sweet. I found her button. And I'm just like, wow. And he saw her wrist, and he was just like, wow. And I'm like,
her wrist.
Oh, well, that was very immodest.
I'm like, wow.
Everything you covered.
Like, if they saw us now, I mean, shorts and a t-shirt.
It's sad.
The story. We don't need to talk about.
Yeah, we'll go into morality. Now, but, yeah.
The story just before that one, it really appealed to the little girl who loved horses and me.
Mm.
Who loves horses was the Pony Express.
Oh yeah, that was
the Morgan. It was a Morgan Cross, this horse, and the boy had to run the route for his father in the story.
Was really sick,
but I like how a father and son team in Spring City used a Morgan Cross horse for the leg of. They're like the Pony Express route. They claimed the horse could smell Indians, as she always avoided them wherever they lay in wait for the male riders.
And then the joke that it ends up at the end of it, I love that it ended up turning in. Good. You gotta love that about the Indians in this book. They take something that we would take as really serious and scary, and it's something managed it twists around to where it's enjoyable and like they are pleased.
It became
with
a game
like,
for them to try and ambush the horse.
Exactly.
Because they admired the horse.
I love that about this. You learn that. I mean, they admire a woman for whacking him across the head with a skillet. They admire a woman for chopping off his finger. Even the guy who shows up, he had bandages all over his hands, was another one.
Uh-huh.
And then they admire an old horse. They can smell him out. It's like, what?
I like how it says they would rush out from their hiding place, laughing and yelling as they waved at the speedy horse. The Pony Express rider would give a friendly wave in return as the horse galloped away.
I know, guys were going to ambush him. I'm just like, oh my word.
She's like, nope, Indians there. Okay, let's go around. Oh, hi.
That's true.
It's
funny.
I thought it was adorable.
Now, overall, this is a wonder. This is a nice
quick
little
read.
It is a quick read, and it has some entertaining stories. It's one that even your children might
enjoy.
My kids
would like it.
If they're not too freaked out by snakes. Or
yeah.
You may not want to talk about
bloody fingers.
Skip
that one.
Older children.
Right.
Yeah, this is not for little ones.
You could probably use a couple of these stories in some family home meetings.
Yeah, that'd be good.
I think
it'd
be a great
like
thing.
That.
Yeah. That's good for that. It's a good resource if you needed a story for a really society lesson, or even in primary, you know, telling
just
about some of the
something.
Bravery of some of the kids without getting into too much detail, but it's a good resource.
It is based on true stories.
Right.
A lot of it is fictionalized, but, yeah. Oh, and the woman who strangled the bobcat
with
her apron strings.
I have that one bookmarked, The Killer in the Hen House.
Yes,
and I thought,
yes.
Where are her boys?
Well,
I swear, what slacker little boys did she have?
They didn't get the rifle fixed.
Exactly.
She went in there, and there was the bobcat. She had to do something.
And they felt very guilty. And
yes,
they should have.
They should have. She got pretty caught up by that. You know what? I can't imagine, you know, going out there to go get my eggs in the morning or even to check on the chickens at night, and there's a bobcat staring at you.
And then to break the lantern, I'm like,
and
how did
able
she
to see.
Know what to do? I was just like, well, there's the spirit for you.
Uh-huh.
But I just went, oh, what would I do? Oh, yeah, that was incredible, too.
Yeah, that
so.
Was amazing. Okay, you have a children's feature today.
I am prepared today. This is the author that I was telling you about. I love Jan Brett. You guys have probably had your children bring home a library book from Jan Brett. If you haven't, I would be so totally amazed. Let me just tell you a little bit about her. It says, with over 30 million books in print, Jan Brett is one of the nation's foremost author-illustrators of children's books, and she happens to be my number one favorite. I really love this woman. Jan lives in a seacoast town in Massachusetts, close to where she grew up. And as a child, she decided to be an illustrator and spent many hours reading and drawing. And she says, I remember the special quiet of rainy days when I felt that I could enter the pages of my beautiful picture books. Now I try to recreate that feeling of believing that the imagery... Yeah, that's what she says. Imagery place I'm drawing really exists. The detail in my work helps to convince me, and I hope others as well. You know what I love about her stuff? She travels all over the world before she ever decides to write a book. Oh, I need to grab something to show you guys. One of my favorite Jan Brett books is called Berlioz the Bear, and this is really neat because for teachers... You can go to her website and get materials. You can send off for a little packet. She sends it to you for free. All this resource material. But she tells how she has gone and researched different things. She'll go off to many different places. Okay, let me show you some of her illustrations so you can see how wonderful. I wish you guys could see it too. She has a website where you can go. It's just www.janbrett, JANBRETT.com. Oh, go there. Check out her stuff. But here's what I love.
These are amazing.
They are beautiful. They're very colorful.
Very detailed.
Fun part about Jan Brett, she always does a story within a story. If you'll notice, here is the story. And then up above, either on her top of the border, bottom of the border sides, you see what's going to happen or what will come next on the next page or what has happened. That's what I love about Janbrett. But pass that around for a second. Another thing I wanted to let you know, isn't that darling? She loves animals. She always, like a lot of the children's authors and illustrators, they make the animals as the main characters. She has written and illustrated 15 books. My favorite among those are The Wild Christmas Reindeer, Armadillo Rodeo, Christmas Trolls. There's so many. She has retold and illustrated 8 books. My favorite, which I'm going to show you in a minute, is Beauty and the Beast. This is my daughter, and I love to read this one. And you'll see why when you see the illustrations. Get a little bit excited there. I also like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. Every year I read, I highlight Janbrett every year, regardless of which grade I've been teaching. She's wonderful. Kids love her. The Mitten, I'm sure you've heard of that one before.
The Mitten.
Right. Gingerbread Baby is so darling. Wonderful. I should have brought that one. I forgot. She has illustrated 9 books. So she has done a lot. But let me show you a little bit about Beauty and the Beast. She's retold the story. Looks nothing like the Disney version, which I love. I mean, I love Belle. But I just like that it's different. She's absolutely beautiful.
These fairy tales go way beyond Disney.
They do. And she does in this story. I mean, there's the beast. He's a warthog. He's a huge old warthog. But here's what I love. You know how I said how she tells another story? If you look down below, you can see that the peacock was his horse and was turned into a peacock. And there is the prince that was turned into the warthog. Okay, turn the page. You see in the tapestries what everyone looked like before. All of the animal servants that are serving the food or taking them around. That's how they looked before they were enchanted and turned into animals.
That's amazing.
And you know what? The children love this.
Be guided. Move your finger.
Oh, it says,
Be guided by your heart's gratitude.
And then the next one says, do not trust to appearances. See, do you see how the musicians were? That's how they looked when they were human. She is so clever.
So these are animals, not inanimate objects like in Disney.
No, the one thing I can say about her illustrations is that they are just beautiful.
They are
appealing to grown-ups, reading to your children. They're appealing to children. I just love what she has to say because she says that she was a student. This is what's interesting. If you wonder why her illustrations are so beautiful, she was a student at the Boston Museum School, and she said she spent hours in the Museum of Fine Arts. She says, it was overwhelming to see the room-sized landscapes and towering stone sculptures, and then moments later to refocus on delicately embroidered kimonos and ancient porcelain. She says, I'm delighted and surprised when fragments of these beautiful images come back to me in my painting. Here's a picture of Janbrett.
Oh, she looks like a very nice lady.
She is wonderful. Honestly, out of all of the authors I've had that I've highlighted through the years, she's always one of the favorites, really, with the children. If you ask them what book would you like me to read today, or it always comes back to one of these that they love.
I think the retelling of The Mitten.
Oh, isn't that wonderful?
Such a wonderful book. I really like that one.
It is. Here is a fun one with Trouble with Trolls.
You can see Trouble with Trolls.
Here is where the trolls are taking the things that they are stealing.
Oh, I see.
So you see that on the bottom of the page?
That's cute.
So, very cute.
I want to see that one.
She's very talented.
Look at him peeking out of the tree
right
there.
Isn't that cute? But as I said, if you are a teacher or you're doing joy school or homeschooling or something like that, you need to check out her website. And because you can just download so many things, art projects, coloring pages, curriculum materials, right there from her website, or send away for her packet, which is for free. She answers every one of her emails. I've sent her emails several times during the past, several years. I'm not going to say how long, but through several years, I've sent her emails, and she'll graciously send you a short little email back, and thank you for supporting her. And I don't know. If you haven't checked out her work, go to the library with your children and check out Janbrett. You will fall in love with her illustrations.
These are very, very cute.
Besides her clever storytelling,
she writes and illustrates.
Right.
Her own books. 15 of them, right. You said?
I would love to have her illustrate my children's book that I'm working on right now. I just don't know how I'd ever have her do it.
I guess you could just ask. That's probably how everyone else does it.
I know.
Just ask.
Also, I wanted to let you know, those are more for, you know, your younger children. I found a book that my daughter and I, who is 8, that this is a Beehive Award nominee, Children's Literature Association of Utah, you know, has those books. And this one's called Lothar's Blade. It's a series of 3 books. The first one is called The Forging of the Blade. It's by R.L. Lefevers. And it is a fantasy book, but it's really good. We like it so far. It just talks about a boy named Kenric and how he needs to learn to defend his land. And the true king was killed. And now there is a new blade of power that is being forged. And Kenric has to find his father that has disappeared. But he faces the same things. I mean, these books are so popular with preteens and teens right now. And it's good so far. I'm excited to read the whole series. But I just wanted to let you know about that also for your children that are a little bit older. It's called The Forging of the Blade by R.L. Lefevers. And check that one out also.
That looks interesting. Maybe we can read that and discuss it in a future podcast, possibly, or something similar.
You know me and my fantasy.
Oh, fantasy. I actually have a book that we can be, once I get through it, I'll let you know. I've had some people tell me on LDS Fiction Readers Group that Tithaea by Ann Perry is one of their favorites, and it has a sequel, I believe. And so I just started that one. I'll let you know how it ends up, because if I like it, we might just discuss it in a podcast.
Well, I might just go put my name on the waiting list at the library and read it myself. If it's something
I still have, you know, 23 books checked out from the library. A few on hold I haven't picked up yet, that I need to get through. All trying to find, you know, resources to read, find books that we can read on the podcast, something that's different that stands out, that we can that's good discussion material that we can recommend to our listeners, so.
Definitely.
Yeah, this is kind of fun. Anyway, well, that's it for us on episode 6, segment 2. Did we talk about the books for next month yet?
I don't think in this.
In this segment? Okay. We're going to be reading The Christ Commission by Og Mandino, Left Behind by Tim LaHaye, and Copycat by Betsy Browning Green. And I'm excited to read one of Betsy's books because so many people love them. I'm excited that we're going to be reading one.
I'm excited too.
Okay, well, that's all for now. And we are going to catch you next month. Thanks for joining us.